Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
He is sacked. He is brought down by Kiko Alonso. And there's your ball game.
That's game time right there. That's game time right there.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
10-yard line, 5, into the end zone. Touchdown, Leonis, my man!
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football, right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. On the show tonight, we'll talk with Caleb Holley, the new wide receiver who came to a tryout for the Bills over the weekend and now has a contract. Jerry Sandusky, the play-by-play voice of the Ravens, joins us at 8 o'clock to talk about his book about his father, Forgotten Sundays. And Mike Reese of ESPN Boston joins us at 8:30 as we catch up on the Patriots.
This place is pandemonium!
Down to the one, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hello, good evening, Tuesday night. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. Happy to have you listening in tonight. I think we got a good show. I hope we do. We put our heart and soul into this show every night, and our producer tonight, Mike Adamek, is ready to go to work as he fills in for the vacationing Jay Harris. Mike, good to have you with us here tonight.
Oh, it's so great to be here.
And you look comfortable over there.
Good. I feel comfortable.
Yeah, you've been there before, but we got a good show. Caleb Holley will join us in just a little bit. He'll be in studio with us. He is the wide receiver who's got an interesting backstory. Grew up in Anchorage, Alaska. Went to junior college in San Francisco. Went to a small college in Oklahoma, East Central University. Didn't get drafted. Didn't go to the combine. Didn't get much of a look. Came here to the Bills weekend minicamp for rookies. And what do you know? Won himself a contract. Signed today to a contract. We'll talk more about him tonight. Caleb Holley will join us in studio at 7:30. 8 o'clock, we're going to talk to an author of a book. And it's a pretty good book. I just finished it this morning. The book is called Forgotten Sundays, A Son's Story of Life, Loss, and Love from the Sidelines of the NFL. The author, Jerry Sandusky, who is the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens. Not the Jerry Sandusky, obviously, of Penn State infamy, not related at all to him. And he talks about that in the book. It spells his name differently. He spells his name with a G. But he also talks in the book about how the Sandusky scandal at Penn State sort of turned his life upside down. But the book is much more than that. Really good book. Short book. Really enjoy it. I'm going to ask Jerry about this. I think it would make a great, like, Father's Day gift, because most of it is about his relationship with his father. It's about a 200-page book. Forgotten Sundays with Jerry Sandusky, the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens. And at 8:30, a checkup on the New England Patriots with Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots for ESPN NFL Nation in Boston. Mike Reese will let us know what the Patriots think of their draft, what's going on with the Patriots and their offseason workouts right now. Plus, we want to hear from you tonight. The phone lines are open, as they are every night. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Anything you'd like to talk about, we still have some leftover observations from the rookie minicamp with the voluntary offseason conditioning underway again, and with the OTA starting now just 8 days away, so we can talk about that. But here's one thing to talk about in the midst of everything that's going on around the Bills today. The Bills are still alive, believe it or not, as a possible landing spot for HBO's series Hard Knocks. You've seen Hard Knocks, right, on HBO? You're aware of it anyway. It's an all-access, behind-the-scenes look for about a 3 or 4 week period at a team's training camp. Nobody wants to do it in the NFL. And so the league and HBO reached an agreement on the guidelines for which teams could be eligible for Hard Knocks. And there are 8 teams that are still eligible following the criterion that the NFL agreed to with HBO. They have to be teams that do not have a new head coach, so the Bills were out of the running last year. They have to be teams that have not made the playoffs in the last 2 years. The Bills, sadly to say, qualify on that count. And they have to be a team that has not participated in the Hard Knock series in the previous 10 seasons. The Bills, one of 8 teams still eligible for consideration for the HBO Hard Knocks crew. The Bills, the Arizona Cardinals, the Bears, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the New York Giants, the Oakland Raiders, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the St. Louis Rams. The reason why this comes out today is because Rams head coach Jeff Fisher said this week that the chances of the Rams being picked as the Hard Knocks team are highly unlikely. So maybe we're down to 7 teams for Hard Knocks. What would you think if the Bills were the Hard Knocks team this year? It usually starts about 2 weeks into Training camp usually goes for a couple of weeks after that, 3 weeks. I think three or four shows they typically produce. Very well done. The series with the Jets a few years ago, I think it was 2011, was outstanding. Just an inside look at what goes on. You watch players being released. You watched all kinds of things going on. But do you want the Bills exposed to that sort of coverage? All-access coverage on Hard Knocks on HBO. What would you think of that? Give us a call. Let you know. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. We've had some tweets already. We'd like to get some calls on this. I would not enjoy it. I understand the exposure is good for branding purposes. It would be good, but I think it would put us all in the perpetual state of waiting for whatever the night is, Tuesday, I think, or typically Tuesday or Wednesday, or is it Thursday? I don't know when Hard Knocks come out. We would all have to watch it, those of us who follow the team, to see what do they know that we don't know. What's happened under the radar? What's happened behind the scenes? I think it would drive me nuts in my job. For fans, it might be a good way to connect even deeper with the team. There is, I believe, the potential for distraction. There is, I believe, the potential for players kind of, and maybe some coaches, kind of putting their own agendas up front. You wonder how actual real it is in the realm of reality TV. As someone familiar with reality TV once said to me, the only thing real about reality, the only thing, what did he say? No, I missed it. It was something about the only thing about reality TV that you can take to the bank is that it's not real. It's not. I mean, it's all made up storylines, not just Hard Knocks, but it's not. I mean, people perform for the camera, which I don't think would be such a great thing. But you may have a different thought. Give us a call. Do the Bills belong on Hard Knocks this year? Would it be a distraction? Would it be a boost to the team? Would it be something that, maybe would benefit the Bills and, I don't know, merchandise sales, national branding, interest in the team? I mean, maybe they get so many good storylines going, the nation likes them, and maybe next year they wind up with a national TV game, if that's important to you. Let us know what you think. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Again, you can follow us on Twitter and tweet in that way at John Murphy Show. And I know it's kind of a nice early summer night, almost late spring night. You're busy tonight running around, taking the kids to soccer practice or coming back from a meeting or whatever you're doing tonight, running over to Target or running over to Walmart or something to do your chores. But pick up the phone. Let us know what you think. Do the Bills belong on Hard Knocks? 803-0550 is the number. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. A couple of tweets already on this issue. Daniel Whale already tweets in, bad idea. That's it. Chris M. tweets in, you'd see everyone in Buffalo get HBO. But I'll pass. This team is young and unproven. Don't need unnecessary distractions. I do think it would be a distraction. Will Fetterplace tweets, and Doug Marrone could handle the team. It'd be a great way to expand the Bills' market and personalities. It would. I mean, it would expand the Bills' branding nationwide. VMH tweets, in horrible idea. The show gives away too much info for teams. They should delay the series until offseason. I don't think that'll happen. I think HBO likes having it in preseason as sort of a runner-up for their coverage of the NFL. I think the league likes it in preseason to increase the interest. Does it give away too much? I don't think it gives away strategy or I don't think. I'd like to talk to a coach candidly about that sometime. I don't think it gives away strategy or what they what they're planning on doing in games. It may give away a little bit of the way these teams think going into games. And the way they prepare, these coaches watch so much video, they know what the other team does. Chris M. continues with his tweet, although we are at an interesting point in the history, the team could have access to some of the behind-the-scenes ownership process stuff. It is an interesting point in the history of the team. Mike Herleman tweets, and good idea, the Bills need that national spotlight back on them. Success is on the horizon. John DeTola tweets, and I think it'd be great if the Bills were the Hard Knocks choice, anything to give relevance to Western New York's team. Tony Bowman tweets in, I vote no. The team needs to focus. This would be a hindrance. Terry tweets in, really bad idea. Finally headed in the right direction with extremely young team. Don't need the distractions. Kevin Marshall's tweet, bad idea. Distraction. So we're all over the board here. Dennis Brown, we don't need to see HBO Hard Knocks. All over the board here with what you think. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The Bills, one of eight teams in consideration for Hard Knocks, the HBO reality TV behind-the-scenes series. Would you like to see that happen? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We'll start tonight with Dan in North Tonawanda. Hi, Dan.
Hey, good evening, John. How are you doing?
Great.
Hey, really, personally, I'm against it, and the biggest reason why is everybody's talking about relevance. If the Bills want to be relevant, win games. You know, win in the point where the relevance becomes to the point where you want to be the standard that people set. Not everybody's fighting to get on the Hard Knocks TV show, but everybody's fighting to win a Super Bowl. You know, you have, I personally know it's a split with regard to the Toronto series. I am very happy we actually have a year. We have 8 games. There's no distractions. We have, you know, a solid fan base and a team that has a chance to really get a good foundation, and the minimal distractions you can give them, the better. I think that especially with, Sammy Watkins and a lot of spotlight on them, especially with DJ Manuel, the guy's got the weight of the world on his shoulders right now, considering the draft picks that was used on him, as well as, you know, all of the weight of the new owner and everything else. It really, to me, there's so much on him right now. I don't think that if you want to add that extra item, could be the straw that breaks the horse's back.
I think you're making good points there, Dan, and I agree with you about the relevance issue. I've had this discussion actually on air with Shope and the Bulldog before about relevance. To me, you become relevant when you win. When you win games, you become relevant. And I was thinking about this, especially in light of Jerry Jones' comments on the Bills, and we seem to put a lot of weight in what Jerry Jones thinks about everything. Why? Are the Cowboys really that much more relevant than the Buffalo Bills? I agree they're more relevant in terms of they have a national following. They had that string of success, actually two major strings of success in their franchise history. But they're another team. They're one of the other NFL teams. They haven't won a lot. They haven't had a 14-year playoff drought, but they haven't won a lot in recent years. What makes them that much more relevant? I would submit it's because they are a national team with a national following in a huge city. But if you win, you're relevant. Seattle, the Seahawks, are relevant now. Were they relevant a couple of years ago? I don't think so. Not particularly. I don't think so. That's how you become relevant. HBO is sort of an artificial way to do it. The Bengals were on HBO Hard Knocks a couple of years ago. Did they automatically become relevant? No. They went to the playoffs. That's why people started caring about or paying attention to the Bengals. Adam in Hamburg. Hi, Adam. You're on the air.
Thanks a lot for taking my call. Just wanted to chime in on this Hard Knocks issue. So I went to college in Chicago and have lived in New York and San Francisco. And one of my favorite things about being in those places is that every Sunday you can go to a bar full of Buffalo Bills fans and cheer on your team. One thing about being in those places is that you never meet anyone who calls themselves a Bills fan who is not from Buffalo. You know, you meet Steelers fans, you meet Bears fans, you meet Cowboys fans, but you never meet anyone who's a Bills fan that didn't grow up here. And so I think from the standpoint of wanting to recruit a new owner that wants to keep the team here, from the standpoint of turning sentiment around the U.S. toward keeping the Bills in Buffalo, and again, just any sort of national exposure that can tip the scales toward getting the Bills into a Thursday night or a Monday night game in the future. And I actually think it could be good for a young team too, give some of these young guys a chance to really show what they're made of, to step up into leadership roles. EJ Manuel seems like a guy that thrives under pressure. Sammy Watkins, same thing. So I actually think it could be good for these guys' development and would definitely welcome the Bills on Hard Knocks.
Doesn't winning do what you are trying to accomplish in terms of national relevance, in terms of building up fan bases from people who don't have a connection to Buffalo?
You know, I think it could, but I think, there's a saying in business, Jim, which is there's no such thing as bad publicity, and I think that same thing applies here. Of course, I'd love the team to win, but I don't really see any downside to the Bills being on Hard Knocks. It's just icing on the cake.
Distraction? No?
I mean, distractions, these guys are in front of a media scrum every single day of the week, aren't they?
Not all of them. And they're not, the media access is pretty restricted and pretty controlled. There's not cameras in meeting rooms. There are not cameras in decision rooms where coaches make decisions about who's cut, who's playing, who's not. It's pretty invasive. I mean, they're all over the place. I see what you're saying, though, Adam. Thanks for calling. Alex in Owego, New York. Hi, Alex.
How are you doing, John?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
So I think, I like the idea of the Bills being a Hard Knocks. Yes, it would be a bit of a distraction, but it would give fans who maybe aren't in the Western New York area a better look at the team. And I love the Bills roundup, but that's only a limited picture, you know, 2-3 minutes. It's just one of those things where, I mean, I live like 4.5 hours away from St. John Fisher, so I wouldn't be able to get up there for the camps during the week. And so it's just, it would give fans who maybe aren't near Western New York a chance to look at the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a point well made. Thanks for the watching Bills Roundup. Chris and I put a lot of work into that. We don't have the kind of access that they have in Hard Knocks, obviously, the behind-the-scenes stuff. But, you know, one of the best features on our website, on BuffaloBills.com, I believe, are the, well, for instance, just a week and a half ago, the draft room all-access video that we posted. And I know it got a lot of views a week and a half ago. During the season, after victories, we have exclusive locker room video access to that. We have mic'd up players for features on a pretty regular basis for almost every game, home and away, the last year or two. So
man,
we do.
I love those.
Yeah.
It's just not a. There's not a ton of opportunity for during the spring, during the camp. There's you do get the some videos and some articles, but this would give a much greater picture.
Okay, thanks, Alex. Thanks for calling. I can appreciate that. We're talking about Hard Knocks, the HBO series. The Bills are one of eight teams still alive for Hard Knocks this year. The Bills, the Cardinals, the Bears, the Jaguars, the Giants, the Raiders, the Steelers, the Rams. What would you think of that if the Bills were featured on Hard Knocks this year? Distraction? Would it hurt? Give us a call. Let us know what you think. 803-0550 is the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. I'm not in favor, but those last two guys made pretty compelling arguments. James Payton tweets, in the Bills most likely to be the number one on that eight-team list due to current owner situation and bold moves made this offseason. Bills Fanatics tweet, it'd be a good distraction. More focus could come with added eyes watching work ethics. Nate OSU 29, good idea. It'd be great for fans, and it's not like there'd been a lot to get excited about. Bills for Life, the tweet, love it and hate it. Love it because of exposure. Hate it because of possible distraction. Vin Lepore tweets, great idea, especially with the possible movement of the Bills. That's not happening. National exposure would help value the franchise. Let's talk about that for a second. I think there is in the last several months, there is a new appreciation for the Buffalo Bills in Buffalo. I detect it from the calls that we get, from the correspondence we get from Bills fans, the contact we get from Bills fans. I noticed it first the day Mr. Wilson died when we were down in Orlando, Florida, talking with the other owners. I was surprised, quite frankly, at the depth of feeling for the Bills' place in Buffalo. And the comments coming out of the owners' meeting today and yesterday in Atlanta, it reinforces that. I do think these owners, it does not appear to be sentiment among the NFL owners to move this team out of Buffalo or Western New York. So I do think it surprises me, actually, the depth of feeling that people have for the Bills' place in Buffalo and Western New York. So I don't know if Hard Knocks adds or detracts from that at all. Hard Knocks, are you for it? Are you against it for the Buffalo Bills? 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. I would guess that the Bills would probably not welcome it, but they might not have a choice. The league has this deal with HBO. Somebody's going to have to do it. You know, they made this deal, putting the criterion in place. Not a new head coach, haven't made the playoffs in 2 years, haven't been on Hard Knocks in the last 10 years, so somebody's going to have to do it. Tom in Rochester. Hello, Tom. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hi, John. I'll give you a couple reasons why I don't like it, and then who I think is actually at the top of the list. First of all, the reason why I don't like it, yes, it's going to be a big-time distraction. People can say what they want, but it's different, and everybody's seen that in courtrooms or anything. If you have cameras around you, you don't act yourself. You act different. These guys need to concentrate on football. They don't need to have a camera over their shoulder every 5 minutes worrying about what they say, politically correct or not. They need to just buckle down and worry about football. And if you look at any of the teams that have been on Hard Knocks the last so many years, how have they fared for their season afterwards? Not too good. You look at the Dallas Cowboys. You look at, Miami. They didn't go on to the playoffs. They didn't succeed. They had part of that, I think, was distraction. The other part is these callers called up saying, well, it gives you national exposure. Well, you get national exposure, and how you get fans from across the country is by winning. And you want exposure as young players get out there and play. That's what you want to see. I don't need a show to show me that. I want to see them win. And last but not least, as far as who I think at the top of the list, I actually would think that the NFL would probably push our HBO first for the Rams, regardless what Fisher says, because of the Michael Sam story. It's a big sell. Everybody would like to document his progression through camp, if he makes it, if he doesn't make it, how the teams accepted him and so forth. So I would think they're probably top of the list. in the NFL's eyes.
I think you're.
It would be a good sell for them.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Tom. I think in HBO's eyes, too, the Rams would probably be at the top of the list. I wonder if that was like a preemptive strike by Jeff Fisher. I wondered also if, he has. He's thought it through and maybe talked to some league people about it, knowing that he's on the Hard Knocks list. Jeff Fisher, I'm talking about here. And maybe he said, look, we've already got a major potential for a major training camp media event with Michael Sam in camp with us. You can't throw Hard Knocks on top of that. And maybe somebody at the league says, you're right, we'll find somebody else. That's just my conjecture. Got a few minutes left here on this issue. 803-0550 is the number to call. Let's go to Bob in Cheektowaga. Hello, Bob. Hey, Bob, are you there? Oh, Bob, you got to turn down the phone. Let's go to Steve in Kenmore. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how you doing? I want to say that I'm opposed to it just for the fact that we have a young team that I think we need every ounce of, they need every ounce of education of playing in the NFL, especially with Watkins and these new draftees. Money-wise, I think the bigger markets are going to actually get it, and I think Chicago might get it just for the fact that they are a bigger market. And, I think Buffalo is just a small market where we don't even have an owner yet. So I think right now they want someone that's established. I'll hang up and listen to what you say.
Yeah, that's not a bad point that you make there, Steve. No one would argue that the Bills, are a major national story yet, although they do have a pretty loyal following. Chicago Bears, big market that they are, probably do have that national following. I don't know that Hard Knocks builds you up to have that sort of following. It probably doesn't hurt, at least for a 3 or 4 week time span in the month of August when, quite frankly, no one's really watching TV much anyways at that time of year. But so I don't know if that would really help that much. Let's go to Mitch in Buffalo. Hello, Mitch. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think it's a fantastic thing. It's the greatest story in the NFL right now. Our owners, of course, passed away, and I think it would bring nothing but good things and help keep the team in Buffalo. I think they're going to the playoffs, and love your show.
How would it keep the team in Buffalo, Mitch? Connect that dot for me, if you would.
I think it would be just the story. It's going to get national attention. I think a lot of people will be watching it. And it's going to help, in general, show the city of Buffalo it growing. I mean, the shows are great, and I think it'll do a great job of portraying the Bills.
Yeah. Okay. All right, thanks. Thanks for calling. We got a few minutes left here. A couple of more tweets on this. Ken Krause tweets in, I didn't approve of Hard Knocks in the past, but considering the Bills situation, I think we should for exposure. Bills Fanatics tweet in, would national exposure help the Bills stay in Buffalo? If so, sign me up. It was not a distraction to the Bengals both years they were on Hard Knocks. It's an interesting question, and I think I detect from the tweets and the calls that there's kind of an appreciation of this point in Bills history. We're at a kind of a pivot point in Bills history as we wait word on a new owner. And, over the next 12 months or so, I'm sure things will clear up. And does Hard Knocks play into that? Does it help the Bills stay in Buffalo? I think winning would help more. I think attendance, high attendance, would be the best thing that would guarantee the Bills' long-term future in Buffalo. And the way to do that is to win. I get that, and I think that would be number one. So it's an interesting question, I think. Hard Knocks, the Bills on the list, 8 teams. We'll continue to talk about this as we move forward. As we said, the NFL meetings, the owners' meetings are going on in Atlanta, the spring owners' meeting wrapping up today. Bills president and CEO Russ Brandon talked to WGRZ. We have audio courtesy of WGRZ.com about the Bills ownership question after some of the meetings today. And Russ was asked if there is anything new on the search for a new Bills owner.
There's not much of a change in where the process is. As we've discussed with you openly, we're going through a process where we will bring on transaction counsel and an investment bank and then go through the process with the National Football League, with the state and the county, and then allow the bank to vet potential candidates. We are not complete with that process, but we are closing in on it.
Russ Brandon, the Bills' president and CEO, speaking at the spring owners' meetings in Atlanta. Brandon said he does expect the investment bank that's going to kind of orchestrate the sale to be selected by the end of this month, so we're talking about the next 10 days. And the Bills' president and CEO was asked about the sentiment among owners as to the future of the Bills in Buffalo.
It really hasn't been a discussion in the room. Everyone is very mindful and respectful of the legacy of Mr. Wilson, and I think that's very fresh on everyone's minds. They know that Mr. Wilson put us in a good position to go through a process that they know will be very sound moving forward and the best for what's best for the National Football League and everyone involved. So it's really been all focused about Mr. Wilson, and you know, a lot of people have come up because we haven't seen them since the last league meeting and just have offered their support.
One thing Russ Brandon did say, and again, the audio courtesy of WGRZ.com, he said, there does appear in this early stage, there appears to be a lot of interest out there in ownership of the Buffalo Bills.
The interest is, from my point of view, is high. We will go through that process again with the investment bank and the transaction council when that's secured. But there's been a lot of support and interest. But that's really the job of the investment bank to vet those candidates and to see if it's and see who's viable.
That's Russ Brandon, the Bills president and CEO, speaking at the owners' meetings. A couple of other reports today. The NFL.com's Judy Batista, a widely respected reporter, tweeted out today that from the meetings in Atlanta, whoever buys the a source told her, a source she says with strong knowledge of the Bills sales situation, whoever buys the Bills has to be prepared to stay there. Which is interesting. I mean, there's a lot of chatter about it. Other notes from the owners' meeting today. Minneapolis won the right to host Super Bowl 52, the 2018 Super Bowl. Owners voted today. They chose Minneapolis over New Orleans and Indianapolis. Minneapolis' new stadium scheduled to open in 2016. The owner said the stadium was the deciding factor. New Orleans has staged the Super Bowl 10 times. Minnesota has once. We were there, 1992, January. When the Washington Redskins beat the Buffalo Bills, it was cold that week. It was like 8 degrees every day. And the Super Bowl's going back to Minneapolis in 2018. And we talked about this last night, the expansion of the playoffs. The owners today tabled discussions about an expanded playoff system until this fall. They did discuss it, though. Commissioner Roger Goodell said the playoffs will not be expanded in 2014. He does expect playoff expansion in 2015. They're talking about putting 14 teams in the playoff instead of the regular 12 right now, giving the top seed in each conference a bye, having three wild card games per conference on the first weekend of the playoffs. Those three winners move on with the bye team and get to the divisional round the next week. It's coming, folks. Even though it was tabled this week, it's coming. All right, we're going to take a break. We will resume discussion of what we're talking about, the prospect of the Bills possibly being on Hard Knocks. We'll get back to that in a little bit tonight. Coming up next, though, we're going to talk about the newest Buffalo Bill. He's a wide receiver. It's a good story because Caleb Holly came to Orchard Park just last week as an undrafted rookie on a tryout basis. He was here for the three-day rookie weekend minicamp and did so well that now he's got a contract, the wide receiver from East Central in Oklahoma. Caleb Holly in studio with us when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
It's a great story from the rookie weekend minicamp. They had a couple of players in for tryouts, and one of them has signed a contract. Undrafted free agent wide receiver Caleb Holly gets a contract after the rookie weekend minicamp, and Caleb Holly joins us in studio right now. Caleb, thanks for coming by. Congratulations.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
How cool is that to come in here for a tryout and wind up with a contract in your pocket?
I mean, it's very cool. I mean, it's a life-changing experience, and so I'm enjoying it right now.
You had to have that somewhere in the back of your mind when you knew you were coming in for a tryout that maybe you'd get something out of this. Like,
yeah, I mean, I was going to something thinking, I'm going to come out on top or – be successful with it. So I continue just grind.
Tell me about how you get invited to a tryout like that. And when did you get the word? When did you get the invitation to come here for last weekend's minicamp?
How I got it? I couldn't really tell you. I just saved my agent. Uh-huh. I really thank him for everything he's done for me, So, he got me to talk to a couple guys. I went to a pro day in Tulsa. And after that, it was just work out. And then I got a call.
Did you talk to your agent since you got the contract?
Oh, yes, I did. He was very happy for me. So, it was a good experience.
Yeah, you hear sometimes people have kind of a dim view of what agents do. There's an example of an agent who really did a good job, right?
Yeah.
Now, who's your agent, by the way?
Jim Chapman.
I mean, think about that. A guy who got his guy a job, that's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah.
You had to be pretty grateful, I guess, for what he did.
Oh, yeah, I really am, because he's really just stuck it out with me.
Yeah. So. Caleb Holly in studio with us. He's the wide receiver, the undrafted free agent who came to minicamp on a tryout basis over the weekend and signed a contract today. I want to talk about your background a little bit, Caleb. You grew up for the most part in Anchorage, Alaska.
Yes, sir.
What was that like?
When I was younger, it was like I always wanted to see some snow. So I guess when we moved up there, it started snowing. So I was like, all right, I like it. Then after a while, I mean, you kind of grow out of it. You're like, all right, it's too cold for you just snow every day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but overall, it was good. You know, I met a lot of people, made friends, known family. So.
Yeah. Anchorage, I've been there. It's kind of a medium-sized city, not unlike Buffalo. In fact, there are some parts of Anchorage, I think, that look a little bit like Buffalo. I don't know how much you've gotten around here yet.
Yeah, I mean, Wasilla, it's not like a city, but it's like a town.
Were you in Wasilla? Is that where you grew up?
No, I grew up in Anchorage.
Anchorage, okay.
But Wasilla, I'm just saying, that's one of the places I can be in.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
And how's the high school football in Anchorage area? You played at East High School in Anchorage?
Yes, sir. I mean, it was the same. Everybody thinks it's different because it's in Alaska, you know what I'm saying? Some people ask me, is it 8-man football? I was like, no, it's 11 plus 11, you know what I'm saying? So it was just like, it was normal. I mean, it was fun, though. I learned a lot. It was just fun.
When the football, you play football in the fall, do you start a little bit earlier because of cold or light?
We started at the closer to the end of the summer. Like, we play like a game or two at the end of the summer, and then it rolls into it.
Is that a weather thing or a light thing?
It's a weather thing. It's like, because you don't want to run into the winter, like when it snows outside and stuff. So.
Yeah. After a while, it's nighttime, right? I mean, by what, November, December, it's dark at 4 in the afternoon, right?
It's dark, yeah.
And that would impact high school football practices, at least.
Yeah, it would.
Do you know of any? I looked it up. Anchorage has produced, Alaska has produced some NFL players, including a familiar guy, Mark Schlereth, who's a native of Anchorage. You know him? He's on ESPN now.
No, I don't know him.
And there's a guy from your high school who I looked up, Mao Tosi. Do you know that name?
Yes.
Yeah.
We were really good friends.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he had this club called Pride.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like for kids to come on and like talent, like talent shows and stuff. So their talents and stuff. And it was pretty good.
He was from your East High School in Anchorage. Yeah. And he was drafted by Denver, I believe. No, Arizona in 2000. Played a couple of years. Had some production in the NFL before he went back to Anchorage to do what you said, kind of start this community thing. So it's been done before, NFL players from Anchorage. It's not that unusual, right?
Yeah.
Do people in Anchorage or Alaska follow the NFL?
Do they follow? Yes.
What are the big teams up there?
Oh, there are no big teams up there? Oh, what are their big teams?
Yeah, what are they following up there?
Really, people just have their own different opinions about what team they want to choose. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like saying the Buffalo Bills. Like, I'm pretty sure right now everybody's a Buffalo Bills fan now.
In your house there, what did you follow? What team did you like growing up?
I like the Patriots.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Because
they won, probably.
No, it was I like Tom Brady, you know, Drew Bledsoe. All them guys. And then when Randy Moss really went there, it kind of like skyrocketed. So.
Do you pattern yourself after Moss in any respect? Or?
Yes. I love him. That's my dude, man.
Okay. We're in studio with Caleb Holly, the wide receiver signed to a contract by the Bills after the rookie minicamp. He was here on a tryout basis. From Anchorage, you went to junior college, San Francisco City Junior College. Yeah. Tell me about that process and why that's cool.
That process was fun, but it was, like, a little difficult because it's like I left home and I went to, like, low-key, I would say, a real world by myself.
Big city?
Yeah, it's big city. And you have to, you know, really, it's like a fast pace. So you have to really go, catch up, keep up with everything.
It's different, obviously, from Anchorage, I would think.
Yeah, it is.
The football was good. You won, what, 2 national junior college championships
there? We lost one.
Okay, you played in the championship game?
No, I didn't.
Okay, but your team did, though,
my
right?
team did, yes.
And go ahead, you lost
and
one.
And the second year, we won it.
Okay.
12-0.
What was that like, winning a championship, a junior college championship?
It was great. Man, I love everything about it. If I can redo it, I'd do it all over again.
From there, you go to Oklahoma East Central College or University in Oklahoma. Yeah. How did you wind up there?
How did I get there? Really, it was like Coach Rashad Jackson hit me up. You know, when he talked to me a couple of days, and throughout the after the season was over, he talked to me. So, and I liked him because he was like my coach there at City College.
Okay,
Coach Dre. So. I mean, I felt really comfortable with him, so I said, yeah.
Caleb, while you were there, I've looked over some of the games. You had an incredible game last year against Northwestern Chicago. 10 catches, 224 yards, 3 touchdowns. Tell me about that game and why things went so well for you.
I think really the things that went well, I mean, my quarterback believed in me. Like, I just told him, man, if you see me one-on-one, take it. I'm going to go run past him every time.
Yeah.
Just take it. I'll make a play. If it's short, high, I'm going to go get the ball. So, and my coaches believed in it too, and we game plan, and then they saw they gave me a lot of one-on-one, and so that's what we went for.
Did you start thinking about the NFL last year when you were playing college football?
Yes. I was like, that's where I want to go, take my talents to the next level. I want to really just do this season based off, you know what I'm saying, what I've been working hard to do.
And so, how hard was it? I mean, there were no invite to the combine for you, right?
Yeah, there was no invite. I mean, it was hard, but, you know, I just kept my head up. I mean, kept God first, you know, prayed up. So, and things just turned out the way they are now.
Who put together the pro day in Tulsa?
Coach Mack, Coach McCarty, you know, so it was three of us that went.
Okay, yeah. And NFL scouts were there? Were there scouts from the Buffalo Bills there, do you recall?
I can't remember a Buffalo Bills scout been there, but during the season, I remember I talked to a Buffalo Bills scout.
During your season last year?
Yes, yes.
Okay, what did you have any impression at all about the Buffalo Bills when you were there?
I just wanted to be part of a team, to be honest with you.
And tell me what you think you bring to the Bills. You're listed as 6'4" tall. Are you that tall?
No.
Sorry, let me cross that out. I didn't think you were. I'm going to guess 6'2".
Yes, 6'2".
Okay. All right. And what it says 200 pounds.
Can yeah, I'm like up and down. It's like up and okay. down. Up for grabs.
How do they have you at 6'4" on paper here?
Maybe because on the field.
Yeah.
I play 6'4".
6'2" is big enough. You can make plays at 6'2", right? Yeah. Tell me your style of play and what you think you can do out there.
Well, in college, I was more of like, you know, I thought myself was more of a deep threat. Like, if I get past you, oh, it's something going to happen. It's a big play is bound to happen. But right now, coming to the Bills, I would say I'm still learning everything, you know what I'm saying? They did draft Sammy Watkins, so
yeah.
It's going to be tough at first. But once I get the hang of everything, you know what I'm saying, I feel like I can bring a lot to the table, you know what I'm saying? Like, you won't just have to worry about one or two guys. You got to worry about everybody on the field.
Yeah.
So,
Caleb, what do you think went well for you this past weekend in the rookie minicamp? What do you think got you invited to stay here and sign a contract?
I think it was just my consistency of just catching the ball, letting me just, you know, finishing and just making plays on the ball.
Everybody's eyes were on Sammy Watkins, those of us watching on the sidelines. What did you think of Sammy's performance over the weekend?
I mean, he's great, man. Just watching him, you know what I'm saying, his speed, the way he came on his breaks, I mean, it's incredible. So I just try to, like, so I do the same thing he's doing. Like, I see how he just finishes. So I just try to do the same thing.
Did you come here? I may have asked you something like this earlier on, thinking that someone was going to get a contract out of this. Like, did you look around in that rookie minicamp and say, well, one of us is going to get invited to stick? I hope it's me.
Yeah. I mean, of course, you're going to have to because, I mean, I did hear that they released a guy. So I was like, shoot, here's my chance. Go for it. You know, just put everything on the table. Just go. So.
And now, how have things changed? I mean, you came in here today for the off-season conditioning program. Did you go to meetings with the receivers group today as well?
Yes, I did everything today.
Tell me about that. What's that like? Now, you have veterans in there too, right?
Yeah. I mean, it was good. Everybody, you know, they welcomed me in, like, learned all the names, Marquise Goodwin, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, it was a great experience. Like, the guys are good. They're fun to be around. They like to joke around a lot, so.
Yeah. It's a big group. I mean, the last time I counted, there were 12 or 13 receivers on the roster, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so that's competition, right?
Yeah, that was competition.
Tell me about Coach Rob Moore, your early impressions of him.
Oh, man, he's a big guy.
Yeah, he is. Not unlike you.
Yeah, so, but he's a good guy, man. You know, he always stayed, like, he always, you know what I'm saying, he explained everything to, like, not overwhelm you, but just enough so you can get it. So, I mean, I like him, so. That's all I can say.
You've had long days here since you've been here this week.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. You've settled down at all and just thought about where you're at and what you've accomplished already in the last couple of weeks, in the last week here in Buffalo?
It really hasn't hit me, but it's probably going to hit me today when I like go to the apartment.
Yeah. So. And what do you think you'll be thinking?
Study, get in rotation, do something. Just, yeah. Like, I don't know.
Keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah,
just it's keep worked so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. Caleb, thanks. Good luck to you. I think it's a great story. We appreciate you coming by to talk with us about it.
Thank you, man.
Caleb Holly, wide receiver. He came here last week for the rookie minicamp on a tryout basis, and now he has a contract. He's with the Bills, signed today as an undrafted free agent. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to Caleb Holly. who signed his contract with the Bills today. He did say his head is spinning a little bit. He's got a lot of work to do yet. By my count, there are 12 wide receivers on the roster right now. And, you know, are all the spots locked up? No. But you can almost name the top four or almost five of them. So Caleb Holly, who's overcome long odds just to get signed by the Bills after going undrafted, after just being an invitee to the rookie minicamp weekend, he's going to have to continue to press in order to try to win a roster spot. Well, coming up next hour on the show, we're going to talk about an interesting book with an interesting guy. His name is Jerry Sandusky. Now, you may know that name, and he is not related at all to the guy involved in the Penn State scandal. No relation at all, but imagine having that name. He's written a book called Forgotten Sundays about his relationship with his father, who was a longtime coach in the National Football League. We'll talk with Jerry Sandusky, who, by the way, is the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens, coming up after the top of the hour. Another hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop CJ Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it? The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands.
This crowd is absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the show, we're going to talk about the Patriots and their draft coming up with Mike Reese from ESPN Boston. That's coming up at the bottom of the hour. There's a great football book that just came out about a month ago, written by the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens, Jerry Sandusky. His book, Forgotten Sundays, a son's story of life, loss, and love from the sidelines of the NFL. Jerry Sandusky is sports director at WBAL-TV in Baltimore. He is live on the line with us. Jerry, thanks for being on the show. We should point out it is Jerry with a G. And that's part of the story in the book, that distinction, isn't it?
John, it's a huge part. Great to visit with you. When the Jerry Sandusky story of Penn State broke 2.5 years ago, it was just a deluge with people confusing me with him. And I understand, look, you know, both in the world of football. And he had a son named John who worked for the Browns. My dad, John, once played for the Browns. So there were a lot of points of confusion. And it was pretty ugly for a long time, so that's why I always introduce myself as Jerry with a G. Don't know why my mom spelled my name with a G, but man, am I glad she did.
I bet. I read the book, and the part about how ugly it got, I have to say I was confused and surprised by that. I don't get that. That says something about our culture, doesn't it, Jerry?
I think it really shocked me. You know, the book, I go into detail. I'm Christmas shopping with my son the week of Christmas, and in the same store, within, you know, 45 minutes of each other, two different people, one with a family, came up and just said horrible things to me. And, you know, part of it was people think they're funny. You know, there are certain things in life that aren't funny. Child molestation, not funny.
No.
So you would see people just doing these awfully mean, terrible things. And at one point, you do start to think, oh, you know, what's wrong with our society and all that. But at a bigger point, John, it always comes down to individual choice. There's as many good people out there as bad people, and one of the things I try to share with my family is we're inconvenienced by this, but we are not victims, and we're not going to act like victims. The world needs more winners and fewer whiners. Let's go be winners.
Very good point. Jerry Sandusky, our guest, the Ravens play-by-play man, the author of Forgotten Sundays, and in the book you detail how really most of your life has been spent around the National Football League, Jerry, thanks to your father, John Sandusky, the legendary coach in the league with the Colts and the Dolphins, right?
And yes, and spent a lot of times up in Buffalo when the Dolphins and the Bills had those great rivalries, and the Bills had the upper hand going to the Super Bowl and going back to the OJ days when the Dolphins had the upper hand. So he was involved in all that, and I literally was born into the NFL. My dad was a coach of the Colts at the time I was born. John, I was a freshman in college. I remember this vividly. The first Sunday in September when I was in college, and I looked out on the quad while the football game was going on, and I saw all these people milling around, not paying attention to football, and it was the first time in my life the thought ever crossed my mind that somebody's life might not revolve around the NFL.
That's a really good point. You know, one thing that struck me, Jerry, and I know this. I don't know that our listeners and many fans appreciate the long work days, the stress, and the and really the work that assistant coaches put in the league. And you kind of detailed that from a family perspective when it came to your father, John Sandusky.
For coaches and for players, it's more than just their individual efforts. Their work schedule creates the rhythm of a household, especially the coaches. Because by the time the players are old enough to have kids who it's really impacting, they're usually out of the league. But coaches have this, you know, this family life that revolves around Sunday. And the country sees Sunday. They see the three-hour spotlight. But what I tried to share with people was the rest of the week and how it impacts the children, how it impacts the wives. You know, you don't see your dad a whole lot on Monday, and Tuesday you don't see him at all. Wednesday you'll start to catch him later in the evening, and when you really start to see him on Thursday, he's already getting stressed for the next game.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to learn kind of the biorhythms of a coach, whether he's in a good mood or not in a good mood, when to talk, when not to talk, and to understand that throughout the fall, your whole life revolves around Sunday, and if your dad's team wins on Sunday, there's a party in the house, and you don't do homework. And if your dad's team loses on Sunday, there is no party, and you are upstairs doing homework. And nobody has to teach you this stuff, John. You just know it from the time you're born.
I love, Jerry, how you detail how much you suffered as a young kid when your dad lost his job as the interim head coach of the Baltimore Colts.
It was a very powerful thing because part of the arc of the narrative of Forgotten Sundays, the details are mine and they're unique to my family, but I think your listeners will very much relate to them because it's such a great football culture in Buffalo. And it's the journey that I think all men hope to make in life, John, and that is to really get to know your father. And your father always starts out as this iconic, monolithic figure, larger than life, who can do no wrong. And then as I grow up and become an adolescent, he's the head coach of the Colts on an interim basis, and then he gets fired. And your world completely blows up. And everything that you know of at home and as kind of the axis of the earth, it's like somebody took the middle of the earth and moved it. And you're off kilter, and you see your father struggling, and you see him fail publicly, and you have to rethink who your father is. And that really sets you on the journey. And throughout the arc of the journey, as I set to get to know my father, in the end, the person I get to know the best is myself.
Yeah. Jerry Sandusky, our guest, his book is Forgotten Sundays. Your dad went on to work for the Dolphins, and you actually detail a run-in you had with Hall of Fame coach Don Shula on, and I guess about a practice field back in those days.
You know, back then, they didn't have the same organized OTA team activities that they have now. In the offseason, it was very loose, and players would kind of gather informally and do 7-on-7 and things like that. So I'm home from college. I was a backup tight end on a Division II football team. You know, we're not talking fast track to the Hall of Fame. And Don Strock, the backup quarterback, he needs a tight end so that they can complete their 7-on-7 out on the field. So he comes and gets me out of the locker room. And, you know, I don't know the plays. I'll just tell you what to run. Don't worry about it. So I'm presuming they're going to play touch football. Well, in the very first play, Mike Kozlowski, the strong safety, gets him over top. He throws a forearm into my face and knocks me on my butt. The second play, he throws me face first in the dirt. The third play, he stands me up. Well, I turn around, and it's like the fourth or fifth play, but you're getting crushed on the line. And who's back in the huddle? It's Don Shula. Well, Shula, by rule, wasn't allowed to coach any other players, but there was no rule that he couldn't coach me. So he gets in my cage. He's like, come on, you're screwing up the drill. Damn it, you're done. He said, look, when Kozlowski does this, you do that. When he steps here, you go there. And for 45 minutes, he was like my personal coach. For 45 minutes, John, I played at a level that I never, ever reached before or after. And it gave me this personal insight into what great coaches do. They take ordinary people and they elevate them. They take good guys and they make them great. They take great talent and they make a Hall of Fame. And it was a powerful experience, even as a coach's son, to see what happens when a great coach zeroes his attention on you and elevates you beyond where you thought you could go.
Jerry, I love also the story of how when you're out of college and your broadcast career is beginning as a young guy working in a sports department in Miami, and you got a big professional break on the same day as Super Bowl 19 when your dad and the Dolphins are trying to win the Super Bowl out in Palo Alto. What a great confluence of events that day.
And so as I go into this day, I'm thinking this could be the greatest day in our family's history. I work for the station in Miami, and they tell me, okay, you're going to anchor the first show today. And I'm pretty naive at the time, don't realize what's going on. What was going on is that they had sent everybody on the staff out to Palo Alto to cover the Super Bowl, and I was the only guy left at the station to anchor the show, and I'd never anchored before. So I'm nervous, to say the least, and didn't connect the dots at first that I worked at an NBC station and the Super Bowl was on ABC. So it didn't matter who was going to anchor the show. Nobody was going to see it. So as I walk into the studio, the Dolphins are up 7-0. And I'm getting ready to go do my first show. And the thought just kind of has a hold of me. I'm like, what a blessing this is. Our family's going to have this ultimate day. My dad's going to win a Super Bowl. I'm going to anchor my first TV sportscast. It doesn't get much better than this. So I sit on the set. The news anchor introduces me. I turn to the teleprompter where I've carefully written this show for the last several hours, and the darn thing's blank. There's nothing in there. So for the next 3 minutes, I just stumble and bumble and beat the show to death without realizing I could have just looked down at my script, but I was so nervous I didn't do that. So I just clobber the show. I come out of the studio, and the Dolphins are losing, and they never recover, and the 49ers clobber them in Super Bowl 19. So I call my dad at the end of the day, and I figure he's just going to be so down. And he's surprisingly upbeat. And so finally, I said, Dad, why are you so excited? He goes, look, I'm just so pumped because you followed your dreams and you started your career today. I'm so proud of you. I said, Dad, but I was terrible. He said, don't worry about it, son. You were terrible and nobody saw it. I was terrible and 150 million people saw it. You had a better day.
That's a great story. I also like how, as you went on in your career and you were covering the Dolphins and traveling on the road with the Dolphins, and you talk about how while your dad was still an assistant coach with the Dolphins, you and he would sit down an hour and a half, 2 hours before kickoff and have these kind of close bonding conversations on the bench pregame. A pretty cool setting, I would imagine, huh?
Such a special time in my life that I treasure more and more as the time goes by, because I'm covering the Dolphins. He's coaching for the Dolphins. We both lead these very busy lifestyles. I'm working in the media and working crazy hours. He's coaching and working crazy hours. So the one time each week we have to just be with each other and share our thoughts and kind of go through what's going on in life, it's a couple of hours before kickoff. And we just kind of developed this rhythm of an unspoken ritual where we would sit on the bench wherever the game was that Sunday, whether it was in South Florida, in Buffalo, in Cleveland, Minnesota, Green Bay, wherever it was. And for the time we had, time would disappear. And we would kind of get to know each other. And at the time, my mom had passed away, and my father was dating again. And, you know, I had to kind of wrestle with that. And there was, years removed, I realized how many life lessons I learned sitting on the bench, thinking I was just having a little bit of a talk with my dad, and so much that we shared in those talks has stayed with me over the years.
Can you tell that there's a great scene in the book, Jerry, about your dad's 75th birthday? And just tell that story, because to me, if I'm making a movie of this book, which I wouldn't rule out if I were you, that would, to me, would be the highlight of the movie. But tell that story.
The part with Shula and the
West
Coast office?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So where my dad's 75th birthday party, it was a surprise party, and he thought he was going to choir practice. Instead, he walks into the back of the church, and there's Don Shula and dozens of his former players and friends, and my brother and sister and I are down there. And so as the evening goes along, we're sitting at a table, and somebody brings up the idea of Bill Walsh and the West Coast offense. And you would have thought my father and Don Shula, these two dyed-in-the-wool Catholics, you would have thought somebody had committed heresy. Because they both snapped their attention to us and said, that's BS. Don't give me the Bill Walsh West Coast offense stuff. That was Paul Brown's offense, because they had both played for Paul Brown in the 50s.
Yeah.
And they were just adamantly defensive about their coach. He said, Walsh coached for him in Cincinnati. It took all the basic principles and gave it a fancy name, and they took all the credit for it. But that was the offense we ran with Otto Graham and Dante Lavelli and Mike McCormick, and that was our offense. And that's not Bill Walsh didn't give Paul the credit that was due. And it was amazing to watch Shula and my father completely defend their coach, two guys who I had always thought of as the first-generation coaches. And you realize that coaches learn how to coach from their coach, and that as they get older, they treasure the memories and the lessons and the roots that they were able to get in touch with. And I just sat there in awe and watched these two men defend somebody from 1950 to 1955, and didn't realize they're right. All the West Coast principles you see today, if you ever go back and watch the old black and white stuff from the 50s, Paul Brown created all those concepts with Otto Graham as quarterback, and they're still valid, they're still vital today. And the grand irony was Walsh and the 49ers basically beat Coach Shula and my dad and the Dolphins using the principles that they had learned. The 49ers just executed them more efficiently that day, and Shula didn't debate that at all. He just debated who deserved the credit.
Hey, Jerry, towards the end of your book, Forgotten Sundays, you tell the story of how you came to have, after your dad passed away, you came to have two Super Bowl rings at your home. Can you tell us that story?
Well, after my dad had passed away, I had no idea this was going to happen. Probably a couple months later, I was still really struggling with his being gone. I was surprisingly lost, even though I knew he was going to pass. I was just really struggling. And one day a box arrives, and my wife says, "Oh, it's for you." And it was from my dad's wife. I didn't really think much of it, so I was going about the day. She goes, "You should really open this." I said, "No, I'll get it after work. It can't be anything important." And so finally she gets me to stop and open the box. And it's his Super Bowl ring from Super Bowl V.
Wow.
And in his will, he had left that to me to take care of it. And, wow, to say I was blown away is the understatement. And I've never put that ring on out of respect, because it's not my ring. I'm the steward of that ring, just as I'm the steward of the name he left me. And so from Super Bowl V, fast forward to Super Bowl 47, when the Ravens are playing the 49ers in San Francisco, and the Ravens win that game. And not only do I get a ring, but my daughter was a marketing intern with the Ravens that year. And so when the ring dance comes around, my wife, who could easily have been my plus one and probably should have been, instead says, "No, you take your daughter. You two go and celebrate this and get rings together." And so I think I might be the only guy in the NFL who not only has two rings, but got his ring with his daughter on the exact same night.
Wow, pretty amazing. How much has this book helped you reclaim your name, do you think, Jerry?
You know, I reclaimed my name a long time ago, John. My hope for this book is that it helps anybody else who faces a challenge. This book has never been about poor, pitiful me and my poor family, and this is unfair. We got past that years ago. We learned some great lessons. And I think the biggest lesson, John, is that hating is always about the hater. I'm not talking about positive criticism. I'm just talking about flat-out hating. But people need to hate on you because the way you drive, the way you look, what you wear, what your beliefs are, the way you spell your name, the sound of your name. When people are doing that, hating is always about the hater. And one of my hopes for this book is that other people who face other challenges, their own personal challenges, can draw some strength from the lessons that we've learned and from the road that we've been able to walk, so that it lightens their burden somewhat, and that they realize that you can make it. You can face any challenge, and no matter how big it seems at the time, there are people around there to help you with it.
Two observations, and I just finished the book this morning, Jerry. First of all, it strikes me that usually it's good stories about father-son relationships in American sports culture deal with baseball. I love the fact that this is a football book. The second thing is you call the book Forgotten Sundays, and yet when I think about the stories you tell about your relationship with your father, most of your interaction came on Sundays, whether it was church or football or whatever.
That's exactly right, because Sunday was the axis of our life, and Sunday was the day we shared, and Sunday was the day that we either agreed or disagreed, but it was our day. We all knew that the rest of the week, the rest of the month, the rest of the year was going to revolve around the outcome of those Sundays. And the reason for the title, Forgotten Sundays, is that as my father reached the last 5 years of his life and slid down the painful slope of Alzheimer's, by the end of his life, he had forgotten everything. He had forgotten every detail of this remarkable life. A man who had traded in his cap and gown from high school to put on fatigues and go fight in the European theater in World War II, to land in Le Havre, France, and push the Germans out of France, to be an All-American in Villanova, to play in the NFL, to coach for 5 decades, he forgot it all. And I realized that it was my stewardship now to carry this forward. And as I reach towards the end of the book and I look back on it, I come to the awareness that there are no forgotten Sundays, because Alzheimer's can take a man's memories. They can strip him of the details that he no longer recounts, but Alzheimer's can't touch your legacy. And your legacy is how you impact other people's lives, and that's permanent, and that carries on forever. So the title comes from the awareness that there are no forgotten Sundays.
Jerry, it's a great read. I enjoyed it immensely. I'm sure it's going to be a big book around Father's Day because it's a great story. We thank you very much for coming on the air with us tonight to talk about it.
John, great visiting with you, and wish you great luck this season, and I hope our paths get across soon.
Me too. Thanks. Jerry Sandusky, he is the play-by-play voice of the Baltimore Ravens, the sports director at WBAL-TV in Baltimore, and he's written a book, pretty amazing little book. It's only a couple hundred pages. As I said, a great Father's Day book published by Running Press. I'm sure it's available at Amazon.com. The book is Forgotten Sundays, a son's story of life, loss and love from the sidelines of the NFL. Jerry Sandusky, the author. Our thanks to him. Really good book. Just finished it up this morning. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're going to talk about the Patriots a little bit, a couple of minutes from now with Mike Reese of ESPN.com. And in the interim, if you'd like to talk about what was on the table earlier, the Hard Knocks thing, the Bills are one of eight teams with a chance anyway, of being on Hard Knocks. Let us know what you think of that. We've had a number of people phone in their thoughts on that at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550. A lot of people are tweeting in with their thoughts on that as well. And I would say that the opinion is kind of divided. Bill's number one fan tweets in, if anything, Hard Knocks would be one avenue for documenting what the Bills are going through. Hot draft pick, team sale, etc. That's true. Joe Miles tweets in, Hard Knocks would be great to show everybody how important the Bills are to the city of Buffalo and the fans. Bills' number one fan, I think this would be a great year for HBO to do Hard Knocks with the Bills. A lot is happening in and around the team. There's some truth to that, and there's some people who believe that it might be a shot in the arm for people to understand what the Bills mean to this area. I think if you think about what's gone on in Hard Knocks in years before, a lot of it focuses directly on the team and intensely on the team and behind the scenes, the coaching meetings, the players' meetings. There's not a whole lot, as I think of the Hard Knocks that they've done to date, not a whole lot about the team in the city, mostly because typically they do it on-site at the training camp site. In the Bills' case, it would be Rochester and St. John Fisher College. So you wonder how much of that message, the importance of the Bills to the fan base, you wonder how much of that would get conveyed if Hard Knocks were to do the Buffalo Bills. But it's an interesting thought, and we will have time for some open phone lines as the show moves along to talk about that. Do the Bills belong on HBO's Hard Knocks this year? They're one of eight finalists. You can phone in your thoughts on that at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. The Patriots, the evil empire. What did they do in the draft? What do they got coming up? We're going to talk with Mike Reese of ESPN Boston when we return. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live tonight from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Just almost a couple of weeks removed from the NFL draft, and it's time to check in with the rest of the Bills' cousins in the AFC East. Talked about the New York Jets the other night last week on the show. Time to talk about the New England Patriots now. And joining us live on the line, he covers the Patriots for ESPN NFL Nation in Boston. Mike Reese is on the line with us. Mike, thank you for being on the air with us tonight.
Hey, John, great to talk to you. And I got to tell you, I already have the plane ticket booked for October 12th game out in Western New York. The hotel reservation, it's always one of my favorite trips of the year coming out there.
Why is that, Mike? Why do you like coming here?
Well, I think the tradition of what the Bills mean to the region, I just love that. And I will say that I feel like with all the new stadiums out there these days and things sometimes, getting, modified, and new technology, I love the throwback feel of coming to Western New York. It actually sort of reminds me of the old Foxborough Stadium that we used to have here in Massachusetts. And I don't know, I mean, I love progress, and I know we always have to move forward, and hopefully you guys have a new stadium someday, but I don't know, there's something about it. It's one of the best seats in the house, too, if you talk about to all the reporters around football who ask about the best press boxes. I know that might change here, but I always appreciated the 50-yard line view, too.
Yeah, all right, so let me be the bearer of bad news, Mike. They're spending $130 million to renovate the stadium, and they are planning on moving the working press up to the corner of the end zone. I think you'll have a good view, but it's not going to be the 50-yard line you've become accustomed to.
Well, you know, John, it's like we say. I mean, you have to do these things for progress, and we understand it. I mean, we used to have the same view in the old stadium, the 50-yard line. They moved us, you know, here. So, I mean, nothing's ever going to stay the same. But I really do appreciate that aspect of coming out to Western New York.
All right, October 12th, the Bills and the Patriots. Mike Reese, the ESPN NFL Nation reporter covering the Patriots, on the line with us. How much do you think we'll see of Dominique Easley in that game, the Patriots' first-round draft pick out of Florida? Do you think he'll be a major factor in New England's defense by then, Mike?
Well, I do. I think, you know, the biggest thing with him, and this is really interesting to me, is you look at what he is as a player, Johnny. He's 6 foot, just shy of 6 foot two, and he's 288 pounds. So I think in NFL terms, you'd say that's an undersized defensive lineman. And Bill Belichick and the Patriots generally are oversized defensive line guys. Think about these defensive linemen over the years that Bills fans would know. Richard Seymour, Ty Warren, Vince Wilfork. Those are supersized guys. So I think what you're seeing with Easley, with the undersized defensive lineman, is Bill Belichick acknowledging that the game has changed. You know, we're in our sub-packages 65-70% of the snaps. We need smaller, quicker linemen that can penetrate and disrupt right up the middle.
And is he an interior guy? Because I've seen him listed in some quarters as a defensive tackle, others as an outside guy. You're talking about him as a interior defensive lineman, it sounds like.
Well, you know, I do think that's where they'll use him most, in their sub-packages. But one thing that Bill Belichick has mentioned about Easley that has stood out is his versatility. If you go for the scouts that watched him over the years, they would confirm this. He's played every position on the line at Florida. I think the one thing you want to consider is when you come to the NFL, I don't think you want him, playing nose tackle, and trying to hold up in a two-gapping type scheme. That's not his game. I think if he's at his best and he's doing what the Patriots hope he will do, he'll be penetrating and creating havoc with opposing quarterbacks.
How much of a factor was his knee injury? What, tore ACL in a practice in late September last year? How much was that discussed, do you think, before the draft and since the draft, as far as his readiness to go to work for the Patriots right away?
Well, it's a huge, huge factor, and here's the background. I mean, he had two ACLs, John. I mean, in a span of 22 months. So he had one ACL about 22 months ago, and then the other ACL last September. So this is a player that has had two ACL surgeries, two ACL tears in the last 22 months. So the big question here in New England is, you know, what's this risk here? Are you getting damaged goods, or maybe more so, will he be able to be the player that he was before the injuries? And I think it's a fair question, and it's one that with the Patriots, I've always felt like they've generally limited their risk with their top pick. They always want to try to hit that right. I happen to feel like this is the riskiest pick that Bill Belichick has made in his 15 years. Because of that, now, I will say this. You talk to scouts that worked on him and watched him a lot closer than I have. They say there's no denying he's a big-time talent. The thing that they are concerned about is there's no guarantee he'll be the same player he was, a top 15 guy that a lot of them said that he was before these knee injuries. So they are taking a little bit of a roll of the dice here.
We're on the line with Mike Reese, ESPN NFL Nation reporter who covers the Patriots. If you have any comments or questions for Mike, the phone line's open at 803-0550. Second round, Mike, the Patriots got my favorite player from the Senior Bowl, Jimmy Garoppolo, the quarterback from Eastern Illinois. And immediately people want to anoint him as Tom Brady's successor someday down the road. It's kind of early for that, isn't it?
Well, I think it is. I think here are the dynamics in play. You know, the Patriots have Tom Brady signed through 2017, and from my view, I have not seen any definitive signs of decline there. But he is going to be 37 years old in August. So I think you have that factor. You have a little bit of a down-the-road view here to say, hey, you know, we don't know what Tom Brady is going to be 3 to 4 years from now, so we want to start thinking about succession plans. Now, best case scenario, they have the succession plan in place and they don't need it. And they use the pick 62nd overall late in the second round just to protect themselves. That's the first factor in play. The second factor is their backup quarterback the last couple years, Ryan Mallett, is entering the last year of his contract. And so they are projecting ahead and saying Garoppolo will probably be the number three this year and then graduate up to the number two next year when Mallett likely ends up elsewhere, probably trying to compete for a starting job. And we know, John, in today's NFL, backup quarterbacks with starting experience, top backups, are making about $4 million per season. And the Patriots don't want to get into that neighborhood when they have a quarterback like Tom Brady who they're paying at very good rates themselves.
Hmm. Hey, Mike, is it foolish to talk about Brady's successor at quarterback if, you know, we don't really know how much longer Bill Belichick will stick around? I mean, it's not inconceivable to think that when Brady goes, Belichick goes, isn't it?
Well, it's a very good point, and it's an interesting one to consider because I think in a lot of ways you can almost look at the pick of Garoppolo, which is really made by Belichick. I mean, he's really running both, you know, the personnel side and the coaching side here, as an indication that Belichick's not, that has no plans to go anywhere. So if you look at Brady and if you want to just say, hey, look, maybe at 2017, that's his last year. I mean, if Bill Belichick was just thinking about the here and now with Tom Brady, he wouldn't really be thinking about the long-term ramifications at the position. He'd be sort of putting all his eggs in the here and now basket. So I actually might look at it this way. I think Bill Belichick's in this for the long run. I mean, I'm thinking 8 to 10 years is not unrealistic to think he's going to keep coaching this team.
Good point. We're live with Mike Reese, ESPN NFL Nation reporter who covers the Patriots. If you have comments or questions about the Patriots, now's the time to get them in at 803-0550. Let's take a call from Penelope in Hamburg. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good.
Cool. I was just wondering, do you have any good Bill Belichick stories for us? Everyone sees him as a pretty serious guy, but I'm sure he has some pretty good stories. Have any for us, Mr. Mike Reese?
Oh, good question, Penelope. I guess let's see, what can we tell you from a Bill Belichick perspective? What type of story could I tell?
He's not extremely popular here in Buffalo and Western New York, as you might imagine, Mike.
Yeah, I think you know, and he doesn't, you know, his friends will tell you he's a completely different guy than what you get in the media. I guess here's a story I would tell, and it's a little bit of an inside football story, John, but it probably explains, you know, why I have had a pretty good working relationship with him over the years. I think one of the things that he wants to see from those covering the team is that you're willing to put in the work and put in the time and that you care about what you do. And when I first started covering the team back when he got here in 2000, he met with me individually because I wanted him to get to know me. And I said to him at that time, I said, you know, look, I'm going to do what I think is fair, and I understand you might not always like it, and that probably means I'm doing okay, and there's going to be other times you like it, but I want to keep the lines of communication open. So if you think that I slipped up or I did something that wasn't fair, or I crossed the line, that we can have an open dialogue. And wouldn't you know, John, I would say probably 13 years after that conversation, you know, all the Aaron Hernandez thing goes down up here. And that was a huge story up here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wrote something where I would say my journalistic fundamentals maybe slipped a little bit because I was rushed and I didn't put the time I needed into it. And I probably shouldn't have hit send on the story, and it ended up getting posted. I got a call from Bill, and he cited the conversation from 13 years prior.
Wow.
That we had had. And he said, you know, you once told me that if I ever, and that was the only time he'd ever done it, you know, you once told me, you know, if I ever had an issue, and of course we had talked many times over the years, but never on, you know, in that frame of reference. And you know, all I could say, John, honestly, because I'm a hard critic of myself, I said, you know what, you're right. You know, on this one, I slipped on my fundamentals, and let me see if I can make it right. And, you know, you try to correct it. But that, so I think that's a story I'd want to tell, maybe just sort of a behind-the-scenes story to just give a little bit of a feel as to what he's like, you know, with reporters, those who cover his team on a daily basis.
One more question for you. We go to Dave in Cheektowaga. Dave, you're on the air with Mike Reese.
I was just curious. I'll give you a quick question, and I'll just hang up and listen. But I heard that the Patriots lost their director of college scouting. I'm not sure of the title, but one of the guys seemed to be pretty high up there in the college talent evaluation, left for Tampa. So So I was curious to know what you thought, what kind of impact that might have on him. Thanks.
Sure, Dave. It's a good question. The person that you're referring to, his name is John Robinson, and he was their director of college scouting, just like you said. And he had been with the team since 2002, started as a scout and worked his way up. He's going to be the director of player personnel for Tampa, reuniting with Jason Light, their new general manager, who actually hired John Robinson here in New England back in 2002. So I think one thing I would say the Patriots do a very good job with is they always have that sort of system in place that if one person leaves, they know, you know, they have the person that they're going to move into that spot. So John Robinson did a great job. I don't think it's going to be a devastating departure for them because you still have Bill Belichick, who has such a huge say in personnel. You have Nick Caserio, their director of player personnel, sort of runs the show. John Robinson would fall in as the next in line. And what I think they're going to do is they're just going to promote his assistant. They've sort of been grooming him for that job because I think they knew after this year that they would probably lose Robinson. So I don't think this move caught them by surprise, and I think they have the right people within their organization to sort of fill in the spot.
Mike, we can't let you go without getting our usual update on Rob Gronkowski's physical status. What can you tell us about him and his readiness for the season?
Well, I think there's a lot more progress, John, this year, you know, than last year, which was just a really tough off season for him, you know, with the forearm and the infections. All signs are pointing in the right direction. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, maybe he doesn't open camp and he's on that physically unable to perform list, but I think there's a fairly decent chance that he'll be available to them at the start of the season, or if not at the start of the season, not too far after that.
Mike, thank you for this. As you can tell, there's always a lot of interest in the Patriots here in Buffalo and Western New York. We appreciate you spending a few minutes with us tonight.
I always appreciate you having me on. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks. Mike Reese, ESPN NFL Nation reporter, who covers the New England Patriots, talking about some of their draft picks, including the top couple, Dominic Easley and Jimmy Garoppolo, and some other Patriots issues. Our thanks to him for joining us. We'll take a break, come back with more. We still got phone lines open, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Mike Reese, thanks to him for joining us. Good guest. A lot of good insight into the Patriots. And that was an interesting story about he and Belichick, the relationship they have. Good question. Good answer. We had a good show. Jerry Sandusky about his book. That was interesting earlier tonight, too. The book is called Forgotten Sundays. It's available in bookstores and on Amazon.com. And the newest Buffalo Bill, Caleb Holly, joined us at 7:30 tonight. Got a contract from the Bills after impressing during the rookie minicamp. He was a tryout guy. A few minutes left in the show. The topics still on the table include Hard Knocks. Do the Bills belong on Hard Knocks this year? They're one of eight teams with a chance to be on Hard Knocks, the HBO All Access Behind the Scenes special. Let us know what you think of that. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll-free 1-888-550-2550 if you have any thoughts on that. They're also... thoughts and news coming out of the NFL, not a whole lot of news, but some news coming out of the NFL spring meetings in Atlanta, Georgia, where the future of the Bills has been discussed in some quarters, not officially by any of the owners, certainly no vote. Bills President CEO Russ Brandon, speaking today to reporters there, said there's not much of a change in the ownership, but he did say he expects the investment bank that the trustees of Ralph Wilson's estate have to hire. He expects that process to be done by the end of this month, over the next 10 days or so. Russ Brandon said not a whole lot of discussion about the future of the Bills, but he did tell WGRZ.com that there appears to be a lot of interest in the ownership of the Bills, at least based on the calls that he has had over the last several weeks.
The interest is, from my point of view, is high. You know, we will go through, you know, that process again with the investment bank and the transaction council when that's secured. But there's been a lot of support and interest, but that's really the job of the investment bank to vet that those candidates and to see if it's and see who's viable.
That is Russ Brandon, the president and CEO of the Buffalo Bills, speaking at the NFL owners spring meetings in Atlanta, Georgia. Also from the owners meetings, a report from Judy Batista from NFL.com, who says A source with strong knowledge of the Bills sales situation says that whoever buys the team, the Bills, has to be prepared to stay there. Well, that makes sense, right? With the lease pretty much ironclad over the next six seasons and a 10-year lease and all, I think that makes some sense. So that really is the real news about the Bills coming out of the owners' meetings in Atlanta today. The talks about expanding the NFL playoffs, those talks were tabled. They will probably bring it up again this fall. But it sounds like that's going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. Commissioner Roger Goodell said the playoffs will not be expanded in 2014, but the commissioner does expect expansion of the playoffs to occur in 2015 from 12 teams to 14 teams. Minneapolis won the right to host the Super Bowl in January of 2018. That'll be Super Bowl 52. A bit of an upset. Many people thought that New Orleans, which has staged the Super Bowl 10 times in the past, might win it this time. It's the tricentennial of the city of New Orleans in 2018. I got to think that that blackout, when the power went out at the Superdome in New Orleans a couple of years ago at the Super Bowl, I got to think that played into it a little bit. That stadium is a mess. We talked about it. Was it last season we were there? Yeah, last season we were there. We talked about that stadium is a mess. That was not a good situation when the power went out in the middle of the game. And I got to believe that played into it a little bit. They've got a brand new stadium going up in Minnesota, going to open in 2016. And Minneapolis will host the Super Bowl 52, in that stadium in 2018. Next year's game, the next game is in Glendale, Arizona, followed by Santa Clara, California. That'll be the 50th Super Bowl, and then Houston, and now Minneapolis. Well, that's it for us tonight. We thank you very much for listening. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Pete Kargis is our engineer. Our producer tonight is Mike Adamek, and the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. We'll see you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.